So this part of our program we have called Awakening the Spirit. I don't know how successful it has been. I see bright faces, so perhaps your spirits are awake. Perhaps it's a consequence of the nice physical exercise, which is also good for the spirit. We began the process, because it is a process, it's not something that happens instantaneously. We began the process by looking at the question of turning, of return, of sometimes called repenting, or recognizing that something needs to change. And of course, when we're at that condition, at that state where nothing works anymore, in a way it doesn't matter what we do, any change is a good start. Make some kind of change. At least I've accomplished this, whatever it is. And then that becomes fuel for further change. Momentum is so important, and you know, we study in our Sufi training, we study the question of, or the subject of impressions. We should do everything we can to encourage positive impressions in ourselves and to avoid at all costs negative impressions. And of course that includes the impression of actually having taken a step forward. That's a positive impression. And we need that, we treasure that. So, the first day we looked at this question of turning or repentance. Then we looked at appreciation. Trying to look around and say, yes, I find something of value, something I can admire, something I can respect, something I can love in whatever I see before me, in nature, in the difficult people that I have to work with. I can still find something good in them. It can be a kind of victory. Sometimes you can see good in them that they themselves are not aware of. And in a way that gives you a kind of freedom. You have to be careful you don't feel superior. That's no good for your ego. But you can feel free when you see that, you know, this person who seems dedicated to making my life a misery, I see something good in them. I see that they have this quality or that quality or this strength or whatever. Because everybody has something. So appreciation was our next day. Then yesterday we looked at love and somehow ended up talking about thorns. And of course, when we talk about love in practice, they do go together. Love is, although we have a popular conception of love, sort of teenage conception of love as being, pink clouds and very beautiful, love will come and solve everything for me. Somebody will love me, that's the first thing. Oh, I want to be loved, and then everything will be okay. It's a much greater accomplishment to love than to be loved. If someone loves you, alhamdulillah, that's a wonderful thing. But the real spiritual accomplishment is to be able to love sincerely, wholeheartedly, without reserve, to give your heart to a person, an ideal. That's an accomplishment. And of course, to do that, as we talked about yesterday, means treading the path of thorns, means confronting all kinds of difficulties. You know, there's that beautiful story about Farhad and Shireen, which is told in different ways throughout the East. It's a very old and often told story, but Hazrat Inayat Khan told it in a certain way. Shireen had been captured by the king, and he was urging her to marry him. And she wasn't very enthusiastic. Finally, to put him off, she said, "Well, what kind of sacrifice? Could you make a canal? You know, bring water to this desert here," which of course is also symbolic, isn't it? She wanted not a canal, she wanted him to bring water to the desert. In other words, that there should be love there. So of course he got, you know, the works department was there with all the laborers, and they were digging a canal, and one of the laborers was Farhad. And one day Shireen went to survey the work being done in her honor. Farhad saw her and his heart broke open in love, and he was very forward, well, not forward, but he was his love erased all the norms of behavior, you could say. And so he simply walked up to her and said, "Oh, Shireen, I love you." And she said, "Well, if you love me, there must be a test." And since she didn't need a canal, there was a canal already being built, she said, "Break a way through these mountains," which is also symbolic. Farhad took up his hammer and went to the mountains and began to beat. And beating upon the rocks, he kept repeating her name, the name of his beloved. And that concentration gave his work tremendous power. And the rocks fell before him. When the king heard that there was a competitive project underway, he got worried. He thought, you know, they told him he's making progress through that mountain all by himself. What can we do to stop him? And one of his courtiers, who had some insight but no heart, said, "Don't worry, I know how to do this." And so he went to the mountain where Farhad was beating away at the rock. And he said, "Well, it's a wonderful work you're doing, but have you not heard? Shireen is dead." And Farhad said, "Shireen is dead? Then Farhad is no more." And he dropped his hammer and he was no more. Of course, it's a tragedy in one way. When Shireen heard that Farhad was no more, then she was no more as well, and their spirits, we hope, flew up to heaven together. The bright part in the story is that the king didn't get his way. But it's a story that tells us about the power of love. Love is not just about, as I said, about pink clouds, but it's about energy, it's power. All of creation came into existence. How? By love. It was love that made that enormous explosion of the universe. And when we feel love, we have tremendous power, we have tremendous energy. So that's the subject of yesterday. We did talk about the need to study forgiveness. And that's a big topic, because in order to let the current of love flow from our hearts, the fountain, to let it flow, we have to, you know, if a fountain, I don't mean a fountain in the garden, but I mean a natural fountain, a source. If it's been neglected, it gets clogged with mud and vegetation and kinds of things. And so in order to let the water grow, you have to dig. You have to dig it out. And Hazrat and I had kind of discovered that some people, when they dig, they find mud and they get discouraged. They say, no, I don't want to do this anymore. But if you keep digging, after a while, the water begins to flow. That water of love, that clear water that washes away everything. Because if there's any universal solvent, it's not something you can buy at the Home Depot or whatever you have here. It's the water of love. And that erases all the problems. Yes, of course, forgiveness sometimes takes a lot of work. But if we're really dedicated to getting that water to flow, then in the end, the work of forgiveness will be accomplished. So, now, today, our theme could be our aspiration, our ideal. What is it that we're reaching for? And we can find some description of this if we look at the last lines of the prayer psalm. You know, really, we have all those beautiful gatikas, gathas, gitas, sangatas, sangitas, message papers, sacred readings, all that. It's all in the prayers. If you want, you can just take the prayers, you can take two words from the prayers and repeat that phrase day and night, and it will teach you, it will guide you, it will open up your life in ways that you never expected. In the prayer psalm, we begin by greeting the divine. And how do we greet the divine? How?
Praise.
Praise, with praise. And that establishes a very clear relationship. Because when we praise something, we're elevating. We're saying, ah, look up there. There is something admirable. There is something, an ideal. And the first part of the prayer is beautiful description of, well, description, you can't say a description, and yet it is a description of the divine presence. Omnipotent, omnipresent, all-pervading, all those qualities that we ascribe to the divine presence. And we talk about how we approach we greet thee in all humility, and so on. So we establish that presence, we describe our process, and then near the end of the prayer, we finally come to what you could say is the message. You know, when you write a letter to someone, at least it used to be that they taught us a very formal structure. Salutation, greetings, you know, warmest greetings to you, I hope you and your family are well. And then finally, somewhere near the middle or the end of the letter, you come to what you really want. When the student away at university writes to his parents, "Hi mom, hi dad, hope everything's all right. I hope my lovely little brother and sister are okay," and all that propaganda. And then finally comes to, you know, "Please send money." So when we get near the end of the prayer psalm, we say, we open our palms to receive, because now hopefully we're really in a humble condition and we're aware that this is a sacred act of reception. And we say, "Pour upon us thy love and thy light." And we acknowledge our needs. It's all right to acknowledge your needs to the one who made you, who knows better. Give sustenance to our bodies, hearts, and souls. And then we say, "Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses." How often do we encounter people who are really, I could say, depressed, chronically depressed, because they don't really know what to do with themselves in life. They don't know what their purpose is. It's a very widespread problem, very deep problem. And I would even venture to suggest that there might be one or two here that still aren't sure what your life's purpose is. Maybe not. Maybe you all know what your purpose is. If that's good, if so, good. We're asking the divine to use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses. How does that happen? Do we get an email? "Here's your assignment." Well, of course, sometimes it comes disguised in an email. That can happen. It can come disguised in the word of a friend. Whatever. That can happen. But in order to recognize the message, we have to be awake and aware and ready to recognize it. We have to be open to the spirit of guidance. Because if we say, "Well, yeah, I don't think this is really a message for me. It's just a spoof or spam or phishing or something." Then we may miss our chance. So we have to be open to the possibilities. And of course, we also have to be aware of our capacities in a humble way. And we have to be willing to serve. I think this is the real key to this question, is that we have to be willing to serve. If we think thy purpose is about me, it's not going to get us very far. If we think thy purpose is about what I can do to help humanity or to help my ideal of love, harmony, beauty, spiritual liberty, then we'll start to get useful messages. Of course, there is that wonderful series of lectures that Hazrat and I kind of gave about the purpose of life. If you haven't read it recently, you might want to go and look at it again, especially the first six chapters of that series are really, really good. So we ask to be used for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth. In a way, that sounds very easy, doesn't it? Okay, use me. The problem, of course, is that usually being used means that we have to act. We have to take decisions. We have to make the effort. It's not that some big hand is going to come down and start manipulating us and moving us like a player on a chessboard around. Okay, now you go over here. Now you knock over the queen. Bang. Okay, good. We have to do it ourselves. Because if we get far enough on the spiritual path, we may someday come to realize that the divine will is not separate from our will. As long as our ego is in the game, there's a problem. But in fact, there is only will. There's only divine will. And we'll talk about that another time. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooseth, and guide us on the path of thine own goodness. Well, we talked about goodness yesterday a little bit, about how the real meaning of goodness in this context is not about what is pleasant and convenient to us, but what brings us into the presence of the divine, of our ideal, of our beloved. And isn't it nice? It's a path. So if we're not yet constantly conscious of that presence, we might go another step tomorrow and get closer, and another step the next day and get still closer. It's progressive. Guide us on the path of thine own goodness. And the next line also is progressive. Draw us closer to thee every moment of our life. So there's never a point where we say, ah, I'm close enough now. I can stop my practices. I don't have to say prayers anymore. I'm in the pocket of God. It's okay. Draw us closer every moment of our life. And what is the culmination? Until in us be reflected thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace. There's a beautiful verse of Rumi's, which I haven't got memorized, and I neglected to bring it in with me, but where he says approximately this, there is no me anymore. I'm like a ruby held up to the sunrise, and the sunlight flows through me, and that is all there is. That is what this last line is about. It's about becoming completely transparent so that the divine qualities can be reflected and refracted according to the divine will, not according to our will. And we can use these last lines of the prayer as a practice. So, as in the other days, I'd like to offer you a suggestion. We'll do this practice a little bit now, and then later in the day, or when you get home in the privacy of your own bedroom, you can do it some more if you like. What do we say? We say, Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. So it's very simple. We turn to the left with our hands open and we say, Thy grace. And then we turn to the right with our hands open and say, Thy glory. And then we raise our hands up and say, Thy wisdom. We cup our hands in front of the heart and say, Thy joy. And then we open ourselves again and look forward and say, Thy peace. Very simple. We just repeat that a few times. Is it clear? The words of the prayer are so beautiful, and as I said, we can take any portion of the prayer practically and make it into a daily practice if you like. I can't think of a better way of attuning ourselves. One other thing that we could say about practice before we do this practice. One of the ways of sounds disrespectful to say it this way. One of the ways of supercharging a practice, of perhaps it's better to say raising a practice to a more sublime level, is to feel that you're doing it in the presence of Hazrat Inayat Khan. In this case, or if you're a follower of some other tradition, you can place that teacher there. But since it's a prayer of Hazrat Inayat Khan, from Hazrat Inayat Khan, if we can feel that he is present with us as we do this, it makes it very special. And it can come to the point where at a certain moment we are no more doing the practice, but he is doing the practice. In the same way that sometimes it happens, Aslan can correct me if I'm wrong, it can happen when you're singing that when you get very deeply into the music, suddenly it's no more you singing the song, but the song is singing you. And in the same way, when we do a practice and we feel that Hazrat Inayat Khan is present, at a certain moment we may feel he is practicing me. He is practicing me. And that's a very humbling and profound experience. So before we do this practice, repeating these words, maybe we can just close our eyes for a minute. And I'm sure that every one of us has some preferred image of Hazrat Inayat Khan. Try to see him in front of you. Try to visualize him. Now, keeping his presence with us, Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace. Thy grace, Thy glory, Thy wisdom, Thy joy, and Thy peace.